It's time to find balance and be refreshed here on Every Heart, Every Woman.
Every heart, every woman.
Get ready for uplifting music and inspiring interviews.
Every heart, every woman.
Let's get motivated to move forward as we share our life experiences. Host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Before we jump into our interview for today, we're going to set the tone for our show with a little bit of live music. So sit back and enjoy.
To the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on.
We're
name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word 100.7 FM. And I have my good friend Vicki McMurray here with me. She is co-hosting today. Thank you so much, Vicki, for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited about our guest today.
I know we have a great show, everyone, so we're really excited. We're going to jump right into it. Every Heart, Every Woman Radio is a program of Love Ministries, and Love Ministries is a 501c3 nonprofit. You can find more information on their website, loveministriesbuilds.org. But today, Vicki and I are welcoming Lacey Montgomery. Lacey, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And we are excited because Lacey just does so much in the community for individuals who are homeless, and she's got a great, great, great testimony. Vicki and I have known Lacey for I don't even know how many years.
4, 5, 6, something like that. Whenever Munger opened.
Eight years?
Oh, my goodness.
8 years. Almost
wow.
8 years.
Wow. Okay, so this has been a while coming, and so we're so excited that you're on the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show with us, and we know you very well, Lacey, but I think the first thing that we would love for everyone to get to know about you is your testimony. You have a testimony that truly touches women, and there's so many things that we can learn from your life. And so we'd just love for you to start by sharing a little bit of your testimony.
Well, thank you. First, I do want to say go look up Love Ministries because they do awesome work.
They do.
Thank you.
You guys do. It's really cool. Yeah. So, gosh, I'm thrilled to be here. I grew up in East Dallas with parents who are wonderful and lovely, the oldest of two. And I was... gosh, my testimony. We grew up at a small church right off of Lover's Lane, and it was the kind of thing where, you know, I went to church because my parents told me to. I remember really not liking it because that was when the hairdryer came out.
Right.
And I did not want to have my hair blow dried.
Right, right.
Or put on pantyhose for that matter.
Oh, pantyhose. Oh, my goodness.
No.
Girl. So, grew up in the church, but it wasn't our spirituality, our life and our faith wasn't really something that we talked about per se around the dinner table. But God was present. And I was some of the people who were some of the first formulators, we'll call that a word,
yeah, that's
of
a word.
My faith in high school were my Young Life leaders. I loved Young Life and really participated that in high school. My mother learned how to ski on Young Life ski trips back when she was in high school
yeah.
at the same high school I went to back in the 60s. And, you know, I really kind of came to understand that our God was a super loving and super forgiving God through that space in Young Life. There was community that was built, and it was really beautiful. And the summer after my senior year in high school, when I was in high school, I was kind of doing what I thought were just age-appropriate things, but I was really enjoying the party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the weekends were for going to the nearest empty field to the keg party
yes.
or, you know, just kind of doing all of those things. I was all the while, you know, making, I don't know if they were doing 4.0s in high school, but I was making all A's. I was a senior superlative. I was having a great time, but I also was just doing some of what I perceived as, you know, age-appropriate drinking and all of that and kind of, you know, showing up to church on Sunday mornings and singing in the choir. But certainly that was not a priority of mine. I was not into it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Young Life camp with a big group of my friends, my sister and her friends, the summer after my senior year, and really had one of those spiritual experiences there. You know, there's so – you do this really super hard hike. It was in Colorado, and you hike up the mountain, and then you're like, I'm not going to make it. This is horrible.
And, where are you, Lord?
Right, exactly. God, I don't know about all this. But you get up to the top, and it's so beautiful, and you can breathe again barely because you're in the altitude, and you've got this gorgeous view. And there's so many metaphors that have direct correlation with our spiritual journey and a mountain hike, right? I mean, those
sure.
are just so directly correlated if you've ever spent time in the mountains. That's personally where I experience God the most.
Mm-hmm.
But all that to say— It was really great, and I felt really convicted. And I went to school as a freshman in college and was like, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to drink because that's what God wants for me. And I was 18, so, you know, I mean, drinking was illegal at the time. Mm-hmm. But I really kind of held on to that and went to school in Alabama my first 2 years of college, which is a different place but a beautiful place, and got involved a little bit in the church there and went through Young Life leader training there. But I was so deeply, as an 18-year-old, insecure and outside of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And I felt really rejected my freshman year in college. I didn't make the friends that I thought that I was going to make, and I didn't have the life that I had envisioned for myself. And I felt very, very sad and very, very rejected by a mass group of girls at a state school in a state that I wasn't from.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that by sitting on the bed in my dorm room and feeling sorry for myself, I think in hindsight what I thought was that God was going to, like, God brick me, right? Like, just, like, poof, make it all right. Like, be Santa Claus God or a vending machine God, which I will admit that I have had the danger of putting God in that space of – I remember praying as a child, God, I want Hillary Dunn's caboodle to end up underneath my bed in the morning. That's some questionable.
Caboodle. Oh, yes. I remember.
Y'all, they're making a comeback.
Yeah.
I'm serious. The internet told me. But, like, that's not really who God is. He's not going to make the caboodle appear underneath my bed, right? So, you know, my first 2 years of college were really, I was really started to get mad at God after I kind of threw myself into what my perception of the faith was at that point. And then I sort of walked away, and I did what is unfortunately that classic walk away for a 20-something, right? And I walked away from the church for about 10 years. And again, you know, I made it, I mean, I'm a pretty sharp girl. I made it through school with above a 3 point, and again, you know, drank at the fraternity parties and kind of did all of that, what I, again, would call age-appropriate behavior, all the while knowing that I drank a little more than the average bear. But, you know, that was all right, you know, and got into some other things that – but my life was good. My family was good. My friends were great. You know, I was nailing it at school projects and, you know, with my grade point. And when I graduated from college, that was the point where – everything had been planned for me, and I had just done what I had been told to do and effectively been who I thought I was being told to be, not by God, but by society or my guidance counselor, who was, of course, well-intended, or my parents, who are beautiful, wonderful souls. But I had just been in this structure for so long, showing up at class, showing up at the dining hall. I ate tuna sandwiches every single day for my freshman year in school.
I love tuna sandwiches.
I do too, but I don't think I've had it since then.
Right.
Kind of wore that one out.
Yes.
But, you know, all that to say, I was now out in the real world as a 20-something and was like, all right, cool. This is what do I do now? Mm-hmm. And I had a great job when I was in, an internship, rather, when I was in college. I worked for a nonprofit organization here in Dallas that benefited Children's Medical Center. And there was a big rodeo event tied to the nonprofit. And I don't know the first thing about rodeo. And, like, you know, bull riding is not my jam, but I loved the passion that this tiny little staff had. That, you know, we worked in one of those beautiful old homes off of Swiss Avenue. The nonprofit district. And I love the passion that this staff had for Children's Medical Center in UT Southwestern. And I knew then that I needed to believe in what I was doing in order to wake up in the morning. But then, you know, life happened and I was young and I was like, yeah, whatever. So I mean, in my 20s, I had a series of jobs that weren't pointing me anywhere. And I was not ready to talk to anybody about God because I felt like God had wronged me. You know, God, I had shown up and I had quit drinking at 18 and I was going to try to help young people with Young Life. But then it was God's fault that I was so rejected by all of these girls in college, you know, that this community that I thought I was going to be a part of just I felt completely rejected. And then, you know, that insecurity compounded and that depression that I've struggled with since I was 18 years old began to compound and present itself. And so I drank to escape that because that was the only thing I really knew to do. In my 20s, I was aimless is the word that comes to mind. I mean, you know, I worked in medical sales for 5 years, which was great and lucrative, but I live to tell you I am not a salesperson. It's not what I want to do. That's not where my heart is. It is not my skill set. I do not like to ask
it
people for money.
Passion.
It wasn't my passion. you know, all the while having that nonprofit experience from when I was like 21 in the back of my mind. And in my 20s, I just got real directionless and I started drinking more and I fell into some other things and it just became not ideal. And I remember a point in my late 20s sitting on a couch thinking, you know, I probably need to go to rehab. But then my parents are the people who have a kid who went to rehab. And I didn't want like that stigma on me.
Right.
I felt so much shame. Brené Brown is one of my very favorite authors. And she speaks and writes so beautifully on shame. And
she does.
She, I think, and I'm probably going to misquote this, so forgive me, but one of her things that she says is that the antidote to shame is profound self-compassion.
Mm. That's right on. That is spot on. I've read a couple of her two books that she has, and it is. Oh, it's four? I only know of two. Well, there you go. I've learned something today.
There you go. But I just felt such shame in every space that I was in, just walking through life, and just fell more and more into myself. I have a best friend who says that we're in our, I don't love this term, but me monster, that we're navel-gazing. She says navel-gazing.
Navel-gazing.
Right? Instead of, I love just the simple profundity of the phrase, look up. Just look up.
Mm-hmm.
God is there. God is here within you and me. But, like, look up to the trees that are blooming in the springtime in Dallas, to the blue sky and the sun that's shining today, to the rain. I have a pastor that said, only God can make it rain. Do you ever think about that? Anyways, we're getting ahead of ourselves. but, you know, in my late 20s, I, at about 27, I was experiencing really, really chronic dry mouth, but I thought that that was because of some other poor life choices that caused chronic dry mouth that I was making. And I was, I lost a bunch of weight, but I had struggled with my weight my whole entire life. So I was like, oh, it's just because I'm sleeping more. And I was doing physical therapy at the time for my low back. And I was like, I'm working out. Please, this was really low grade working out. But turns out in September of 2010, so right before the time around we met, I ended up really having one of those, where am I going to lay in my parents' house for them to find me dead moments. I couldn't breathe when I walked down the stairs. I really honestly saw the light. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it or what that means, but I did. And I had that thought. And my parents were both out or at work. It was in the middle of the day. And it turns out that I was in diabetic ketoacidosis. So as a 27-year-old, I had never been diagnosed with diabetes. Later, I found out a little bit of probably why that ended up happening. I probably gave myself type 1 diabetes, but I was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes in the hospital when I was 27 years old, or 28, one of the two. And in the hospital, I mean, you know, my best friend called me randomly that afternoon, and she said, are you okay? And I couldn't breathe. And I was like, no, I think I need to go to the Presby ER. And so she came and picked me up. And it was one of those things that was not random at all. I mean, she worked a full-time job. This was 3 in the afternoon. And that was God-ordained, undeniably. So I find myself having lost a full day of my life, diagnosed with type 1 diabetes as a 27-year-old, in the hospital bed thinking, this is a second chance that God is giving me. And I, at that point, was finally ready to think, okay, God's something, and I'm not. And lucky for me, this beautiful church opened about 2 months later, right in my neighborhood on this beautiful corner in East Dallas. And I remember being up, you know, until 3 in the morning one night, and a guy that we were partying with was like, I'm going to go to bed because I'm going to go to church in the morning because this new church is opening and I'm curious. And I was like, that's weird. And a couple of weeks later, I went with he and his now wife and his wife's sister, who's my best friend. And I walked into that space and was moved to tears. I knew that I had walked into a place that was home. And you'll hear so many people who are members of this church say the same thing. I mean, they just had that beautiful feeling when they walked into that space. And I didn't have the language around it at that point in time, but the Holy Spirit is alive and well in that place. And I was open and ready to receive it. All that to say, that was in 2010, and I kept my drinking up for a lot longer because drinking was a social thing for me, and it was, you know, it was dinner, it was Thanksgiving, it was Easter lunch, it was Friday night.
It's a part of fun in life.
Exactly, and I want to have a champagne toast at my wedding, you know, and I and all of that. And so fast forward to 2012, and in 2010, I really started, I kind of threw myself into the church. I started volunteering with the youth ministry at our parent church. I started volunteering with Habitat for Humanity, which is where I found my awesome, cute rescue dog, Rufus.
Aww.
And I know, he was wandering around a Habitat site, and this one lady was like, somebody's got to take this dog home. And I sat down, and he just sat in my lap, and I was like, okay, God,
okay,
I get
it. He chose me.
He found you.
We found each other, truly, and it was such a beautiful moment. And he's the best dog we've ever had, we, my parents and I. Because we share custody.
Okay.
I work a lot, so he stays with them during the week, and they love him.
Okay.
But all that to say, I started volunteering a lot in the church, and I started working in ministry in 2011, for a ministry for women coming out of prison and their children.
I remember this.
And I loved it, but I was not cut out for that job at all. I certainly had a passion for it. So now I'm back into this space where I can be serving God and serving people in my job and being paid for it. But, you know, and I'm at church and I'm so involved, and I'm still every night drinking and thinking, God, I don't want to do this. And with my Bible right in front of me, and just, again, I think asking God to be this vending machine, this Santa Claus,
right,
God, like,
right,
God, save me from this. And
right,
that, and the spring of 2012, all the while thinking that some other folks in my life maybe have a drinking problem. In March of 2012, I was supposed to go to the musical with my mom and my sister. We have season tickets to Fair Park. I love me some musical theater. And was at work, so I couldn't go. And I called my mom the next day, and she said, well, we didn't end up making it to the musical. We're on our way to the Baylor ER. Your sister has alcoholic hepatitis. And I had never heard of that. All I knew about hepatitis was, like, you turn yellow and you can get it from tattoos, right?
Right.
And I remember going to a friend's house that night and, like, Googling it and not really understanding what I was reading, and ending up down in the ER that night with my family and looking at my sister, who looked like she had been colored in with a yellow highlighter, and her eyeballs, her body, all of it. And I remember the doctor handing me and my dad a mortality graph, like a one sheet with some info on it. And not a math major, but I remember looking at the graph and knowing that it was trending poorly, but my sister's 26 years old. Like, it's, you know, it's fine. I mean, I knew at that point that we needed to have some sort of an intervention, what I thought at that time. But I wasn't ready to do it, because then I would have to throw myself under the bus.
Right.
I would
have
to face all of my own stuff at that point.
Right.
And as the family member, as the sister, I was kind of the one who also had to take the lead. And we end up in the hospital. This was during Lent, so like any good real heavy drinker, I had given up booze for Lent. Way to go me.
Right.
And so, you know, we ended up at the hospital, and the next morning I had to go down to prison for my job, and then I came back to the hospital, and, you know, she was sort of lucid but a little weird, and I remember them saying, if we have to intubate her, it's not going to be good, which is, you know, where they put the tube down your throat,
right,
so you have to breathe assistedly. That's a word, too.
That's a great word. Perfect.
And Monday night, I remember leaving the hospital. So she went in on Thursday. I remember leaving the hospital on Monday night to go meet up with a group of my girlfriends. We were all in a Bible study together, and we were going to make posters, you know, and just, like, encouraging cards and things,
right,
to put on the hospital walls. She was in the ICU of Baylor at this point. And, you know, we just, you know, exchanged some words, and she was like, I just want to go outside. And I was like, honey, I don't think you can. You know, she's all hooked up to all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have to intubate her that night, and she died Friday morning at 26 years old of alcoholism. And that was never, ever how I thought that our story, my family's story, was going to go.
Sure.
You know, she looked at me and my mom and was like, when is our cousin getting married? He was getting married 2 weeks after that. And I looked at my mom and I was like, she's not going to the wedding. She's going to rehab. Like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so, this put such a divide and so much pain in between my family and I, who had had, my parents and I, who had had a really, it had been a tense relationship for a while, because every time the phone rang, I was nervous that it was going to be my sister and she was going to be drunk, whether it was 7 in the morning or 1 in the afternoon or 2 in, you know, the morning, whatever. This is every single excuse to never drink again. This is every reason to never drink again, and it's also every reason to drink for the rest of my life, right?
Sure.
Time goes on, and I pick the bottle back up because that's my way to cope. And I ended up checking myself into rehab because I couldn't cope with my grief or anything very well in 2012. They told me a lot of things there, and I tried to stay sober for about 2 years, and I succeeded. I didn't have a drink, but I was really mad about it, and I was really miserable. I was very restless, very irritable, and very discontented. And in 2014, all the while, God is still in my life, you guys. I mean, I am still going to church. I am still serving in the church. Mm-hmm. I am singing with the choir. Mm-hmm. I am on my knees praying. But I am just real mad about life because my solution to life was drinking, and right. it had been taken away from me at this mm-hmm. point. And in 2014, I looked at my family and our therapists and my friends, and I said, I'm going to try drinking again and just see what happens. And if it doesn't work, it's fine. It wasn't going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And I drank, and I drank bad for about a month and a half. And I woke up. Trying to play catch up. Yeah. And I woke up on a Sunday morning to get into a van full of high school students to drive them to Louisiana on a mission trip. And I meet this woman on that trip who is sober and thrilled about life, like mm-hmm. so happy about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, girl, I don't know what's up with you, but
it's
all right.
Contagious.
Like, you're like kind of bugging me about, with yes. your excitement yeah.
right
now.
Right.
That was July 20th of 2014. And I am a recovered alcoholic. And that's my sobriety date. I remember on that mission trip, the youth pastor preached about the Israelites being in bondage. And I think that God does not show up only within the walls of a church. He shows up within the walls of all of us, mm-hmm. within our heart walls, our bodies, mm-hmm. our persons.
Mm-hmm.
And he was preaching about what we're in bondage to. And I thought, y'all, that I was in bondage to alcohol. And as it turns out, I was really in bondage to my own selfishness and my own self-centeredness because that – it's not – I mean, I'm a recovered alcoholic, that's for sure. But I met this woman and I was like, I want what you have and I want to do whatever you're doing. Tell me what to do. And for over 3 years, I've done what she tells me to do and have found a beautiful – depiction of God that I did not know existed.
Right.
And I work a spiritual program that is amazing and connects me to God, this power greater than myself that removes my insanity that I can't remove myself. I can get on my knees and ask God to remove it, but I can't work on all of my insanity that mm-hmm. I need to be removed, mm-hmm. my selfishness, my self-pity,
right.
my resentment, my fear, my gosh, fear, so much fear.
Right, right.
And through that, I have started working for a beautiful organization that I love so much, Austin Street Center, which serves vulnerable adult men and women experiencing homelessness. And the coolest thing about the shelter and about the work that I do now is that I get to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is that we are all created to serve God and the people about us. My life isn't actually about me anymore. It's
right.
about serving God and the people
Amen.
About me. And that is the coolest darn thing.
You know what, Lacey, this we have just learned so much, and you've just been so open and honest with us. And I know that there are so many women listening right now that find so much encouragement in your story. So I thank you so much for being so honest so far. And we've got so much more that we want to talk to you about. But I think that's a good place to take a break.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a break and we will be back in just a few minutes.
Listening to Every Heart, Every Woman, the show where women find balance, peace, and inspiration. Now let's get back to the show with your host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome back to the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word 100.7 FM. We are here visiting with our friend Lacey Montgomery. And Lacey, I was just saying on the break, and I just mean this with all my heart, I have just always been inspired by you. And it's just so beautiful to listen to you because you're so true to who you are and you're so authentic. And it's just, it's beautiful. I don't feel like every path I cross with people, I always get that. And so thank you. It encourages me to be the same way in my life. So
thank you for that.
Well, thank you for sharing today. So it's going to lead us into our next question with you. So once you got sober and were like, okay, now what, God, what do I do? You had a brand new career path with a fantastic center that you're working in now. Can you share with us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I did. I mean, there were some other things between me getting sober and me starting my job at Austin Street Center. But effectively, you know, part of it was through connections in the church. Mm-hmm. We have an amazing leader and an executive director at Austin Street Center. Daniel Roby was just recognized as mm-hmm. one of Dallas's 40 under 40.
Yes.
He is doing incredible work. He grew up in the United Methodist Church.
He
so,
did.
You know, we knew of each other a little bit. And in my work with another organization immediately prior to me moving over to Austin Street, we had kind of heard of each other. He had just moved back to town, and we met, and we're like, you know, if it's ever time, let's get back together. And then, you know, God led me directly to that space, and it was time. So it was really just a divine course of action that led me to Austin Street. I do tell you, though, I served down there as a little kid. And I tell people that often whenever students are in the shelter, I'm like, hey, you know, this could happen to you, too.
Right.
You could end up working here.
That's right. True.
Because, you know, you never really know what God is planting in you. I took a group of youth with my church's youth group down to Houston one year. And one of the things that we were asked to do was to make ourselves a lunch and lunch for another person experiencing mm-hmm. homelessness. So myself, the other group youth leader, and the 15 or so youth all walked into this park in Houston and with two lunches to find someone experiencing homelessness to share our lunch with. And I thought to myself, I do not want to do this. This scares me. This scares me. This scares me. And then I looked around and I realized, oh, no, I'm the adult. I have to lead by example. I have to lead these 15 youth into this park and have a meal with a person experiencing homelessness. And, you know, I found kind of the least threatening looking person. And I sat down next to him and I started to talk to him. And I found out a little bit about him, y'all. And I didn't know what God was starting in me in that moment. It was 3 years after that that I started my work at Austin Street. But all of these little things that were planted in me, both as a child, as a high school student, and then again as, you know, a youth volunteer, mm-hmm. Really led me to this space where there's just somebody, a friend of mine asked me, how do you do what you do? And the reality is that I just believe that God meets us where we are.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, he does.
Absolutely.
So I want to ask real quick because you just brought it up. First of all, I have our Sunday school class a couple of years ago, Candace's Sunday school class. We came and fed lunch one day at the center, and it was so moving for me. And the appreciation from the guests there was just so gratifying. And we weren't giving them, you know, five-course meal. We were giving them hot dogs and chips and drinks, but just to have the interaction with them. And I was scared to death, too. I just remember thinking, what am I going to say to them? Well, they're just people like all of us.
Exactly.
That have fallen into bad times or whatever the course. But you were talking about the sandwiches. And isn't that something that you do at the center now? Did I see something on the website about that where you make a sandwich and you...
We do. Well, so we actually depend entirely upon the community to both provide and serve three meals a day at Austin Street Center.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Okay.
Yeah. So different groups, like the group that you came and served with, mm-hmm. will provide. So they'll make or order or cater. I had a group last week who everybody threw in $20. They catered Central Market Catering and, you know, fed lunch to about 100 people. And then breakfast and dinner is served every single day to about 411 folks. So that can look a number of different ways, whether it's, you know, you two make a brisket in your home and then three other people do that, but I'm really not good with meat, so I make a salad. And mm-hmm. she's really not even good and trustworthy with salad, so she buys the paper goods.
Mm-hmm.
We bring them all down, and then we get to serve the folks, the guests at Austin Street.
Okay. Yes. So I've actually been with a group before as well, maybe two times. And I remember they asked me to get on the microphone and, like, sing Amazing Grace. Yes. Sing Amazing Grace. And so one of the things that I remember when there and when able to feed and to serve is you can bring your children.
Yep, absolutely.
And you're right that you may be thinking in your mind, I'm afraid, I don't know what I'm going to do. You get there, it's normal people, it's regular people. You speak to people and get to know everyone, and you just have conversation, and you just kind of like get in the game, and then it becomes natural.
Absolutely.
And they love just to be seen and be talked to. It's really a beautiful experience. How would somebody, if we have a listener right now thinking, well, shoot, I want to get my office involved. I want to get my church group involved. I want to get my book club involved. What do they need to do?
They reach out to me. I'm your girl. You
all
can
right.
just email me or call me on my direct line.
Okay. We'll share all that info towards the end of the
yes.
the show.
I want to speak to one thing really quickly,
yes.
though, that you guys both said. So Austin Street Center's mission says that we're going to provide safe shelter and help meet the basic needs of the most vulnerable people experiencing homelessness in Dallas, which we identify as men over 45 and women over 18. I want to tell you guys, though, that our basic human needs, all of them, all of ours, are food, shelter, water, and human connection.
That's right.
And people experiencing homelessness are so often deprived all of those things.
Right.
So it's, you know, Carla, what you were talking about, it's that piece of looking people in the eye and smiling and learning someone's name and sharing
yes.
a little bit that we don't know what that can do to change the trajectory of
right.
a person's day.
Yes.
Right.
And it can be that little, which is a great point to make, because I think when I initially went, I thought, well, what am I going to talk to you about?
Mm-hmm.
When it just might be a smile and a here you go and I hope you enjoy your meal to how are you today? You know,
yes.
it's fabulous.
When we were there, I don't think I was there, but friends of mine, they are doctors and they were there and they had their two children with them. And I mean, their children are young,
yeah.
like toddler, you know, and it's been a great experience for their family and they do it every year. But there was a guest there who needed help with their tracheotomy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you know, they were like, well, what do we do? You know, they're doctors. Well, what do we do? We're here to, you know, meet the need of food, but we can help. So then they just went up, started a conversation, and in that conversation just said, we're doctors. Can we look at your tracheotomy? And fixed it right up and, you know, and just did it like that. And they at first
That's
they were
amazing.
Scared because they were like, we can't go up touching this person's neck. But the conversation just started it and then opened the door, you know, for that to happen. So I don't want anybody to think that what I have to offer is not what someone needs. Go do it.
What you
Great
have to
point.
Offer is always going to be something that someone needs.
Yes.
We just have to open ourselves and put ourselves in those positions
exactly.
to use those giftings that God gave us.
Yes.
Yes. Push past the fear.
Yes.
Push past the fear.
So talk a little bit more about the you said that you provide shelter also. So I have to admit that I don't know that much about that side of Austin Street Center. So how does that all work?
So we 411 people seek shelter with us every night. We're located down near the Deep Ellum Fair Park area in a big shelter building where there are 411 beds and cots for men and women to, you know, get a good, safe night's sleep on.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we serve women over 18 and men over 45, which has been identified by some studies in our board as the most vulnerable adults experiencing
okay.
homelessness.
Okay. Okay.
We recognize that children, of course, are incredibly vulnerable. We work really closely with different partners in the city where we will send folks to if they come
if
to
they
our
children.
Doors, you know, with mm-hmm. a family or with children.
So how late are the doors open at night?
Well, we're a 24-hour facility,
oh,
of
okay.
course, but we usually fill up, all of the beds fill up by about 6 p.m.
Wow.
Okay.
So our intake process daily begins at 2 p.m. for women
mm-hmm.
and 4 p.m. for men. We always need volunteers to help us with that intake process.
Okay.
And then by about 6 p.m., we're typically completely at capacity.
And you're separated, if I remember correctly. You have women on one side and men on the other. And I will also say, it was so beautifully organized the day that we were there. And it was just so orderly and everybody was so relaxed coming through the line. I was super impressed with the operation I could just tell people were comfortable being there and you want them to feel safe.
It really is a beautiful, safe, easy space. We've got security on site 24 hours a day. You know, we've got about 40 people on our staff now, a lot of whom are in the shelter. You know, my job is such that I'm in a building a stone's throw away right next door. But I spend a lot of my time on my feet in the shelter, showing people around and engaging with our guests. And y'all, that's the most beautiful part of it, because you start to see someone and you start to know a little bit about their story. And I think that it's really hard. This is another Brené, but Brené Brown says this, but it's really hard to be afraid up close.
Right.
Oh, brilliant.
When you get to know something about someone, mm-hmm. I personally, in my experience, think that it's virtually impossible not to care for them.
Right.
Care about them.
Right.
And the reality in Austin Street Center is that you and me, we are both humans experiencing this life. And I think that if we're all honest with ourselves, we are all broken and trying people.
Amen.
Some of our circumstances just don't look exactly the same.
Right.
And, you know, there for the grace of God, I did not sleep in Austin Street Center.
Right, right. So I think that what you're saying leads into my next question. What have you learned about the love of the Lord from guests at the Austin Street Center?
The love of God that exists in the people at Austin Street Center and the work that we do and the people who come in from the community and the guests at the shelter. I think one of the things that I've learned about the love of God is that the love of God exists inside all of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is not, God is not vindictive or Santa Claus or vending machine
right.
God. He's not this thing, this entity that's way up there, way over there that I have to somehow approach and then get to in my life, that God is living and breathing and full of profound mercy and grace for you and me and the people living halfway across the country and the people who are sleeping at Austin Street Center tonight. It is
Absolutely.
The same God who created. The nature of God is that He is our creator.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all are creative people. And that exists in you and me and the producer, in the person who's sleeping in Austin Street Center mm-hmm. tonight, that God is everlasting. And which these are all, I feel like these are all just, yes, does about God, right? But that, I mean, God lives in people.
In all people, broken people.
Broken people are especially where God lives. That's where He does His best work.
He does.
There's a Leonard Cohen lyric that says something, the cracks are where the light gets in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the light of the world. That is Jesus. That is the light that gets into
yes.
those that brokenheartedness, that trauma.
Yes. Yes.
I agree 100%, which leads to something I'm so excited to ask you about,
yeah.
the Common Ground Project.
The Common Ground
Experiment.
Which is
such an opportunity for people to, for young kids to see the light that is shining through in broken people.
Absolutely. And Carla, you spoke about this a little bit, just about young children being in the shelter. Everybody who stays in the shelter is a son or a daughter.
Mm. Man.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who stays in the shelter is a son
With
or a
somebody's
daughter.
Somebody's daughter or mm-hmm. someone's
and
son.
And some people are mothers and grandmothers mm-hmm. and grandfathers and uncles and aunts and dads. And so to have children come and engage in certain ways in the shelter is such a beautiful thing. We are part of the Common Ground Experiment with the fourth grade class at Wesley Prep, which is this darling little school over at Lovers Lane United Methodist
it
Church.
Is.
And last year, Lori Cousineau, who is the fourth grade teacher, came to me with such enthusiasm mm-hmm. that I thought, yes, I want to do whatever you want to do.
Right.
She has her fourth grade students watching TED Talks, which clearly did not exist when
you
I was
know,
in the
Bob
fourth
Goff
grade.
Bob Goff called their class.
Bob Goff called
oh,
their
yes.
class.
Yes, they read Love Does a couple of years ago, and his cell phone number
is in the back.
In the back of the book, and they called and made an appointment, so he called back and spoke to the class.
That's amazing.
Wow. She is a fabulous teacher.
She is a fabulous teacher. She is molding the next leaders of
really
our
is.
Nation, of mm-hmm. our world. I mean, mm-hmm. and she is doing a beautiful job doing it. And this fourth grade class last year, you know, I said, yes, I want to do whatever you want to do. And, you know, I want to be mindful, too, that our guests at Austin Street Center are people.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something to come and take a selfie and show
right.
that you did
right.
this
something
thing
at
with
a,
people
right.
experiencing homelessness right. and then, you know, just leave. These are people. This is everyday life.
It's not a circus. And it's real.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not a circus. This is real life. And Lori brought her fourth grade students down last year and has done it again this year. Last year, they wrote poetry together mm-hmm. with
oh.
the women. Women who are part of our Most Vulnerable Women's program and
mm-hmm.
sat down, and it was basically who are you? What are you? One of the poems was, you know, I come from green grass and collard greens. Mm-hmm. And then I come from Snickers bars and the football field.
Yes.
And it was kind of back and forth like that. And, you know, the things that they come from together that this
yes.
child in this, you know, beautiful, wonderful school in, you know, North Dallas, and then this person who's living in a shelter. That they have, that we are common.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they came to this common ground. And what's the coolest, y'all, is that these fourth grade students who, like, I just have so much admiration for these kids, they came up with this name, the Common Ground Experiment.
I don't have great words here. I'm just in awe
of
the program.
That's,
I think it's
that's
fabulous.
Wonderful because in an earlier show, I believe we talked, it may have been with our moms, we talked about getting children involved in
yes.
things and allowing them to explore different things when they're young because, of course, as you said before, you had been involved in homeless guests and getting to know people and doing things, but you had no idea that that was your that was going to end up
no.
being your
the mustard
your
seed.
Passion. Yes.
The mustard
yes.
seed.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's very important in life, I believe. You know, my family's in education. My husband is a superintendent of schools in community ISD. And so that's just like a creative way to introduce, you know, children to a different way of life. But also I love that it's called Common Ground
right.
Experiment. Yeah, that's
so
perfect.
I know, it's
that's
wonderful.
Perfect.
I think one of the really important points, though, that you made is that, you know, everybody's deepest desire is to be seen and known.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's just to be seen and known. And that's what Jesus does for us. We are fully seen and fully known by God.
And what he asks us to do as well.
Exactly. Somebody said, preach the gospel, use words if you have to.
There you go.
Isn't
right?
That,
it's
well,
the action.
It's, it is your action. It's, you know, you may be the version of the Bible to
exactly.
somebody today
exactly.
by how you treat them or what you say to them. And it's being in that obedience that can be so beautiful if you're willing to allow yourself to go there. So
that is wonderful. So, Lacey, let everyone know how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. My email address is Lacey, Lacey.Montgomery, MONTGOMERY, at austinstreet.org. You can follow me on Instagram, Lacey Montgomery, no dots, no spaces, same spelling. I think I'm on Facebook, too. I don't understand Twitter or Snapchat, so I don't know about all that.
Okay, no problem. No problem. Well, Lacey, we are so thankful for
I'm
you
so
being.
I'm so thankful.
Yes, you're just so open and so candid, and we have truly enjoyed our conversation. So thank you
great.
So much.
As have I.
And thank you, Vicky, for co-hosting,
thank
as
you,
always. And I say co-hosting, but Vicky's like the heart of this. So thank you for every single thing.
We do this together. It's a labor of love. But I just have to say, Lacey, thank you again. It's just such a pleasure.
It's my honor.
And I know that women are going to be touched and inspired
Amen.
By your message today.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank
you
all.
Well, this has been the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word 100.7 FM. Our show is a program of Love Ministries, a 501c3 nonprofit. You can get in touch with Vicky and I on our website, ehewradio.com, or you can follow us on our social media sites at ehewradio. And we will see you here next Sunday at 6 p.m. for some other great conversation. I am your host, Carla Nivens. Have a wonderful week.